Chapter 1. Earth Orbit. My name is Joe Bishop, and sometimes I hate my life. Especially when a certain super-smart ancient alien artificial intelligence asshole almighty makes things difficult for me. Skippy, I complained in frustration. What the hell did you do? Damn it. Coming home from our mission that had saved the Earth again, I didn't exactly expect a ticker tape parade in New York City. Especially since no one had used ticker tape since, like, what was ticker tape anyway? I suppose I could ask Skippy if I wanted to risk death by boredom from a long, overly detailed explanation. It wasn't sticky like duct tape, I knew that. Confetti? Ticker tape was a type of confetti? Whatever confetti was. Or was confetti a type of Italian ice cream? No, that was gelato. Whatever. Anyway. While I didn't expect a parade, I also hadn't expected to land in a pile of shit up to my nose either. Except that's what happened, right after the Flying Dutchman returned to Earth from our Spec Ops mission and UNEF Command learned that we had prevented a Theranan ship from traveling all the way to our home planet. We had stopped a Theranan ship from coming to Earth, which likely would have led to the enslavement or extinction of humanity. "Hey, great job," UNEF Command told me with one breath. With the next breath, they told me how much trouble I was in. How much trouble I'd been in, since shortly after the Flying Dutchman had jumped away from Earth orbit on the mission we had not been expected to ever return from. What Skippy had neglected to tell me or anyone aboard our captured Theranan pirate ship was that he had planned a surprise before we jumped away. A nasty, totally unexpected, unpleasant surprise. Never, never trust a shiny beer can.
You'll have to be more specific, Joe, Skippy said. What of all the things I've done are you bitching about this time?
You know damned well what I mean. You put that Krestang troopship on a timer and jumped it away from Earth orbit the day after we left.
Oh, that. Hey, if you knew what I did, why did you ask what the hell I did?
Is this one of those stupid human things where you ask what when you really mean something else like how or why? You know what I...
Or did I just malign your whole species, when the real problem is specifically Joe Bishop's stupidity? If so, I apologize to monkey kind.
Sensing that he was only going to interrupt me again, I paused to collect my thoughts. I was in my office near the bridge. I'd gone there after getting royally chewed out by UNEF Command. The Dutchman was in a stable orbit, and there wasn't anything for me to do as the captain other than finish my official mission report and prepare for the crew to go down to the surface. To go home. Against the odds, we had returned. That was my fault for not being specific. Why? The correct question is why. Why did you do it, and why didn't you tell me?
This is kind of a multiple-choice question, Joe. I didn't tell you about it after we jumped away because there was no reason for me to do that, duh. If I did, you would have pestered me about it every freaking day, right?
Could be. Probably, I admitted.
Whatever. And if I had told you about it before we jumped away, you would have done something characteristically stupid, like trying to stop me. Which would not have worked, by the way.
You don't know that for sure, I insisted.
I don't. Of the two of us, which one has the most patience and is the most stubborn? As a test, let's see how long we can each hold our breath.
Not funny, Skippy. All right, granted, you were going to do it anyway. The question still is why? Why jump that ship out of Earth orbit? It's circling the sun halfway to Mars now. We were counting. All of humanity was counting on getting access to that ship, access to its technology.
I did it for you, Joe.
For me. For a moment, I was speechless.
Listen, Skippy, if you think putting an alien ship out of reach is a gift, please don't go shopping for my birthday.
Skippy sighed.
Not you specifically, Joe. I did it for your species.
Because it entertains you to mess with us?
Well, that too, he admitted. Man, I wish we'd been here to see the faces of major Earth leaders when they saw that their tempting source of alien technology jumped out of easy reach.
Ha-ha! That would have been great.
You know what? I'm sure there must be video of that somewhere. Let me search.
We need that technology, dammit. Skippy, we got lucky learning about the Theranan sending a ship to Earth. If an alien ship ever does get here, we need advanced technology to defend ourselves.
Advanced technology? Wait, you mean Krestang technology? Sometimes I forget how primitive your species is, that lizard technology impresses you. Okay, maybe I can see you monkeys being awed by bright, shiny things aboard that troop ship. Not everyone has your godlike level of technology, Skippy. We have to do things the hard way. We're getting off the subject as usual when I talk with you. Go back to explaining why you did this in order to help humanity.
Exactly.
A little more detail on that, please. Like, how does this help us? It removes a major reason for you monkeys to whack each other with sticks, and it gives you a reason to cooperate. Ah, you see it now?
Yeah, I think so. Crap, he truly had been trying to help us.
When that troop ship was in low Earth orbit, maybe a half dozen nations were capable of sending a team up there to take possession and then fight over it. But now that it's halfway to Mars, nations have to cooperate on a joint mission to get there.
You are 100% accurate on that one, Joe. In my estimation, there was a better than 50-50 chance some nation would have nuked that troop ship into vapor in Earth orbit to prevent a rival nation from controlling its technology. Instead, for the past few months, your NASA has been cooperating with the space agencies of China, Europe, India, and also Japan. They are building a crude tin can of a spaceship to travel out to the troop ship. You might remember that before we left, there was an argument going on between the UNEF nations about who had rights to alien technology. One of the Kristang dropships that I shot down crashed in shallow water off the Philippines, and four navies almost got into a shooting war over recovering it. This is after international cooperation and sacrifice aboard the Dutchman saved all of your miserable monkey asses.
I remember. That was a minor dust-up just before the Dutchman departed. I figured it was going to amount to nothing more than harsh words being exchanged, political posturing to please each nation's domestic audience, and a negotiated agreement. Smashed lizard technology wasn't worth fighting over. It especially was not worth fighting over when the nations involved had such a monumental amount of work to do rebuilding our planet from the ravages of the Kristang. Perhaps I was underestimating the short-sightedness of political leaders.
Your motive was good, Skippy, and I see why you couldn't announce it beforehand. If he had jumped the troop ship away before the Dutchman left, the UNEF governments would have insisted that we recover that ship before departing for the wormhole, which, because those same governments had taken so long to make the inevitable, obvious decision, we did not have time for. And instead of being angry with and hating each other, those governments now all agree on one thing. They all blame me. That is totally unfair, Joe.
They're not going to blame you, because they already knew you were a sneaky little beer can. And they won't blame themselves for trusting you. That leaves me at fault. Although I don't know what they expected me to do. I guess I'm at fault for not persuading you not to do something I didn't know you were going to do.
It's not your fault, Joe. I should have left a message to explain why I did it after the ship jumped away.
Even if you had baked a cake and delivered that message in person, it would still be my fault, Skippy. I was the mission commander. It was almost time for me to take the Silver Eagles off my uniform and put the sergeant stripes back on. Unless they were going to bust me back to Private Bishop before I left the ship. Anyway, that's all water under the bridge now. We need to go get that ship.
As I already explained to those dum-dums at UNEF Command, that ship's reactor is in cold shutdown, and I will not help you ignorant monkeys screw with it. I used the last energy in the jump drive capacitors to jump it away, so it can't jump back. And if you're thinking of jumping the Dutchman out there, good luck programming a jump accurately enough without me.
Also, darn, I just discovered a fault in the calibration of our jump drive coils. I need to take them offline.
I hate when that happens. Could take a long time to fix, or a short time, if you know what I mean.
You forget that we have two Theranin dropships, and we can mostly fly those without you.
Ha! No, I did not forget that, mi amigo. We have two and only two dropships. It's too hazardous to send a single dropship out that far, so you will need to send both, and they will both have to stay there for a very long time while your idiot scientists try to figure how to get the troop ship back to Earth. Good luck with that, by the way. During that time, we will not be able to use those two dropships to bring crew and supplies up to the Dutchman.
Crap. You planned this?
Nope. I got lucky. It just worked out exceptionally well for me. According to your underdeveloped understanding of luck, that is. Remember, we did not expect to come back here. If you monkeys still want that troop ship, you are going to have to do it the hard way. After I landed at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio for debriefing by UNEF Command, the U.S. military, and CIA, I received a thorough ass-chewing. I mean, there was a line of officers and government officials a mile long lined up for an all-you-can-eat buffet, and my hide was on the menu. They had been pissed at me before we returned about the Kristang troop ship being inaccessible. Our unexpected return had given them a new reason to throw me in the manure pile. Within 5 minutes of us contacting UNEF Command after we jumped into orbit, I had transmitted my mission report and summary. All the other officers on board had sent their own mission reports, which I had not censored in any way. 5 minutes after my own report reached UNEF Command, I was explaining and defending myself to outraged parties from multiple nations. Perhaps that was the good aspect of me being in such trouble. It had united the five nations of UNEF in collective indignant outrage toward me. Yay, teamwork! My explaining of my decisions lasted 4 full days. After the first 2 hours, I learned to stop defending myself and simply accept the ass-chewing. Truthfully, they had raised grilling to such an art that it was kind of a privilege to witness it, even if the person getting grilled was me. By the time they were done, I was burnt so crispy that you wouldn't have been able to discern me from the charcoal. Assuming, that is, that you understand my grilling analogy. Skippy attempted to defend me, which I think likely made matters worse. If UNEF Command was disappointed in me, they now thoroughly distrusted our alien AI. In the eyes of UNEF Command, Skippy had stolen a priceless starship from them. Until we returned with our fresh intel, Earth had no way to know for sure that there weren't a dozen Kristang starships lurking in the vicinity of Earth. Without the troop ship's technology, Earth was completely defenseless. From the viewpoint of UNEF Command, if Skippy could not be trusted to keep a Kristang ship in Earth orbit, how could he be trusted to keep his word and shut down the wormhole near Earth? Damn. I had not even considered that issue until we returned. The whole time while we were away on our luxury cruise, UNEF Command had been panicked that the local wormhole was still open, that a fleet of pissed-off aliens would be jumping into Earth orbit without warning, and the best source of advanced alien technology had been jumped out of reach by a clearly untrustworthy alien AI. For all UNEF Command knew, Skippy had sold out the merry band of pirates and delivered the Dutchman back to the Theranin in exchange for help from a more advanced species. People on Earth had been frightened and angry, going home at night to their loved ones and not knowing whether that night was the last for humanity. When we unexpectedly returned, and I proudly and sort of smugly announced that we had again saved the world by foiling an attempt to send a Theranin ship to Earth, all their fear and anger was transferred to me. Hell, I don't blame them. I'd be angry at that jerk Joe Bishop if I was them. The first night after debriefing, thoroughly exhausted, I collapsed into a bunk. Sleep should have come immediately. To my body clock that was used to Dutchman standard time, it was 04:30, and I had been harshly questioned for over 14 hours. Maybe I was too stunned to sleep. More likely, what kept me from sleep was thinking that the other merry band of pirates, especially the leaders like Chang, Sims, and Smythe, were probably also being subjected to unfriendly interrogation by UNEF. In my debriefing, I had stated many times that decisions during the mission were my responsibility alone. UNEF knew that was what a commander was expected to say. "This sucks, Joe," Skippy commented angrily through my Z-phone. "You saved this unworthy ball of dirt again, and they're upset with you. Ungrateful jerks." "They're not ungrateful, Skippy. They did commend me and the entire crew for our actions against the Surveyor ship."
"Yeah. They commended you for like 2 seconds before nitpicking and second-guessing every freaking decision you made along the way."
"They do have a point, Skippy. They made me the mission commander, and they gave me only 2 real objectives.
Which you totally accomplished."
"We accomplished the first objective, shutting down the wormhole. The second objective, that is equally important, was preventing aliens from learning that humans are flying around the galaxy in a pirate ship. UNEF Command thinks the major reason that I didn't manage to blow that objective was through pure luck. Looking back, I think they may be right about that."
"Joe, the only decision they have a problem with is landing on Newark instead of letting the entire crew die aboard the Dutchman when the life support power ran out. Those dum-dums forget that if the crew hadn't landed on Newark, we would never have learned about that Surveyor ship's mission."
"That's not relevant, Skippy. At the time I had made the decision to land on Newark and risk aliens discovering us, I did not know that we would learn about the Surveyor ship. UNEF is evaluating the decisions I made based on the information available to me at the time.
They're questioning my judgment, not our results.
What?
He sputtered. You can't separate the two. UNEF Command thinks you should have condemned our entire pirate crew to death just to avoid taking even an entirely reasonable risk.
I wouldn't have been condemning the crew to death, Skippy. You were already doing that. There was another of his signature pauses.
That hurt, Joe. How do you figure that? My rebuilding the ship out of moon dust saved the crew.
No, that was only temporary. After you rebuilt the ship and we left Newark, you and I talked about whether humans could fly the Dutchman by ourselves. You said it is impossible. The crew was going to die in cold and lonely space anyway after you contacted the Collective and left us. Remember? I tried to make a bargain with you to bring the ship back to Earth so the crew could land here safely. Then just the two of us could go out to contact the Collective. Based on what I knew at the time, the risk I took by landing on Newark only temporarily postponed the crew's inevitable deaths. If I had decided against landing on Newark, it would have been because I figured we were all going to die soon anyway, as soon as we found a working comm node for you. There was another pause, longer this time.
Crap. I'm sorry, Joe. This is my fault?
He sounded genuinely remorseful.
No, I said quickly to reassure him. No, Skippy, I was the commander. The decision was 100% mine.
This isn't a clear wrong or right issue, Skippy's voice reflected his frustration. It's purely a matter of judgment.
You are correct, and UNEF disagrees with the judgment I made. From just the first day of debriefing, it was pretty clear that UNEF would not be entrusting me with command in any future missions. Command of a mission from which we weren't expected to return, yes. Command of a mission with a more complicated objective? No. UNEF didn't trust my judgment. I was too young, too immature, too inexperienced, and too reckless in the opinion of UNEF. After 14 hours of explaining over and over why I had risked the failure of the primary mission objective, I was beginning to question my own judgment. Maybe they were right. After all, I had flown the Dutchman right into an ambush. Later, a whole lot of things could have gone wrong on Newark. And the long road trip we took across the surface of Newark in our Barney Wego RV was for nothing. The comm node and AI we recovered were both useless. Also, that RV sank. Don't forget that little detail. In UNEF Command's view, that was yet another shining example of my genius leadership. Not. The fact is, I actually got lucky when Skippy discovered the Theranin plan to send a ship to Earth. In UNEF's opinion, stopping that ship was the one good thing I did after we shut down the wormhole on our way outbound. Yes, in order for UNEF to not be completely disgusted with me, all I needed to do was simply save the freaking world. Not that I'm bitter about it. Skippy still tried to comfort me. Hey, it was what we found on Newark that most convinced me to temporarily set aside my quest for contacting the Collective. So, landing on Newark is the whole reason I agreed to come back to Earth. That, and the fact that as commander I ordered the ship to come back here.
Oh, yeah, sure. He almost stuttered on the words. That too.
Joe, is there anything I can do to help you?
Jump that troop ship back into Earth orbit? I suggested hopefully.
Anything other than that, I meant. You may not be flying monkeys like in The Wizard of Oz, but you will have to fly up there by yourselves if you want access to that ship. Or hey, how about this? The troop ship's orbit is somewhat elliptical. I calculate that ship's orbit will come within a million miles of Earth within the next 6,000 years. If that helps.
Good night, Skippy.
Skippy's credibility, and by extension my own, had been severely damaged by revelations in my mission report. UNEF Command was disturbed and intrigued by what we had learned about Elder Sites, about Newark, and, most importantly, about Skippy himself. The first time we came to Earth, the story Skippy told UNEF was that he had been part of the Elder Civilization. The information that Skippy had been able to give us, more or less, matched the limited info that UNEF had heard from other sources. An ancient species now known as the Elders departed the galaxy long ago, and no one knew what happened to them. The Elders had created the wormhole network. Little was known about the Elders. Scattered bits and pieces of their technology were highly prized by current species, although use of Elder technology had to be done very, very carefully. When the Rindaloo fought the Maxulks in the original battle that began the endless war that still raged across the galaxy, both sides had used Elder devices as weapons.
use of destructive Elder technology had activated previously unknown machines now called Sentinels. These machines devastated both sides of the conflict equally. Devastated as in scorched planets and scoured entire solar systems of life. Wherever the Sentinels struck, nothing lived, and nothing could stop them. After wiping out large areas of both Rindaloo and Maxulk's territory in mere days, the Sentinels had disappeared. They were still out there, waiting. Now we knew that someone had used Elder technology to destroy a moon and push a planet out of orbit. Someone had done that after the Elders left the galaxy and before the Rindaloo discovered electricity. Skippy admitted that he had no idea who had done such terrible things. As far as he knew, there were no intelligent beings in the galaxy during the time between the Elders and the Rindaloo. The fact that Skippy was baffled called into question the accuracy and usefulness of his vast knowledge base. After Newark, Skippy was not even sure who he was. "Why," Yunef asked me, "should we trust an alien AI who doesn't know his own nature?" Perhaps everything that Skippy thought he knew was wrong. We couldn't trust his analysis, even if Yunef trusted that shiny beer can's intentions. And they didn't. I didn't have a good answer for why we should trust Skippy, other than that he had helped us so far. His help had saved our planet, twice. And if we planned to take the Dutchman back out to verify there were no other starships on their way to Earth, we absolutely needed Skippy. Even if he was an untrustworthy little beer can. Paradise. The Krestang frigate, to seek glory in battle is glorious, suddenly appeared in orbit above Perdassus, the world called Paradise by the traitorous humans, and Getanu by the dishonorable Ruhar. The ship did not bother to deploy a stealth field. The gamma-ray burst of its jump-in could not be masked, and the ship would not remain in the area long enough to play cat-and-mouse games with the Ruhar ships protecting the planet. Speed, not stealth, was the frigate's ally that day. The frigate would attack the planet in order to harass the Ruhar defenders, and as soon as it was able, the frigate launched missiles and fired maser cannons at pre-selected targets on the surface. But its primary mission that day was to gather information, not merely to inflict minor, if annoying, damage. The Glory's captain paid only scant attention as all three of his missiles were intercepted and destroyed by the maser beams of the Ruhar ships before his weapons could cause any damage. No matter. The missiles had served their purpose of tying up the Ruhar defenders while the frigate scanned the surface and the space around Paradise. The attention of the frigate's captain shifted rapidly between two displays. The first showed the incoming sensor data, indicating the scan was already 57% complete. The second display monitored the known Ruhar ships and predicted how soon the Glory would need to jump away. This second display the captain watched with a combination of anxiety and mistrust. The predictive ability of the computer behind that system was known to be right only 42% of the time. The Krestang, who built, designed, and now maintained the system, based on concepts stolen from the Jirapatha, insisted that their system worked correctly. The problem, they said, was lack of data from the frigate's inadequate sensors.
"Maser beam near miss, Captain," the ship's second-in-command reported. "Another. We were bracketed that time."
The real problem, thought the Glory's captain as he noted that the planned sensor sweep was now 71% complete, was the unforgiving math of physics. Sensor data crawled to the ship at the slow speed of light. Ruhar ships could jump faster than light. An enemy ship could appear on top of the Glory before the frigate even knew the defending ship existed. What saved raiding ships was their own ability to quickly jump away and altitude. The Glory had jumped in high enough so that it could form an outbound jump point to escape, but low enough that the planet's gravity well prevented defending Ruhar ships from jumping in accurately. Even a Ruhar ship with a well-calibrated jump drive, performing a relatively short jump, could only be assured of emerging within 30,000 kilometers of the Glory. There was no way around the distortion of the gravity well, with the limited technology available to the Ruhar or Krestang. A separation of 30,000 kilometers was far enough that the Glory could safely jump away after its shields absorbed one or two direct hits from maser beams. More than two maser beams or a single hit from a railgun or smart missile would burn through the frigate's thin shields. Frigate captains were trained to jump in, shoot, and jump away before enemy fire could find them. The scan was now 84% complete. The Glory's parameters for this mission had been a successful 75% scan. An additional 10% would allow the frigate's crew bragging rights, without earning her captain a reprimand for needlessly endangering his precious ship. Bravery to the point of foolhardiness was normally expected in Cristang captains, but not this time. There were only 7 Cristang ships still around the Paradise system, and none of them could be risked without strong assurance that the risk was worth the potential gain. The small remaining task force was centered around 1 elderly cruiser with its escorts of 2 support ships, 3 frigates, and 1 destroyer. The task force had only 2 purposes: to force the Ruhar to maintain a substantial naval presence in the Pardassus system and to gather intelligence, to provide intelligence that hopefully would convince the clan's leadership that 1 strong push would take the planet back. The dishonorable Ruhar and their allies, the Jarraptha, may have decisively defeated the Cristang-Theranin coalition forces in the sector for the moment, but even the triumphant Ruhar could not be strong everywhere at once. The planet Pardassus could still be retaken, but that possibility grew fainter every day. The ship was rocked by a glancing blow from a maser beam. The Ruhar Defense Force had narrowed his location enough to begin using targeting sensors. The Glory had been maneuvering randomly since it jumped in, so that by the time a light, slow maser beam reached its intended target, the target was no longer there. Sensor scan was now 87% complete. The shields had protected the ship from the maser beam, but that dissipated energy was now a cloud of high-energy particles surrounding the ship and degrading the effectiveness of the sensors. The Glory's captain ordered to jump away, and the little frigate disappeared 61 seconds after it jumped in. Jumping away so soon after jumping in rendered it impossible for the frigate's jump drive to have any kind of accuracy, but that did not matter. All the frigate's crew cared about was getting away without emerging inside a planet or moon. Anywhere else was safely empty space. While the ship's crew were preparing for a series of jumps back to the task force's gathered ships, the Glory's captain quickly skimmed through highlights of the sensor data. Strangely, the Ruhar did not appear to be putting any effort into stiffening their planet's defenses against raiders. The Ruhar did not consider the planet important enough to expend the resources, or the Ruhar were now stretched so thin that they did not have the resources to deploy. Either circumstance was favorable to the Cristang. There was something else interesting in the sensor data. Substantial areas of the southern continent, mostly covered by jungle, had been cleared for crops. Human crops. There were large areas of fields growing plants suited to human biology. A closer look at the sensor data revealed newly constructed crude settlements populated by humans near the fields. And in the fields were Ruhar heavy equipment, assisting the humans with clearing the jungle, planting and harvesting crops. Despite being ordered to resist the Ruhar by their rightful patrons, the Cristang, the traitorous, cowardly humans appeared to be wholeheartedly working with the Ruhar. Those large fields, the Glory's captain thought, would make tempting, easy targets for a raiding ship's maser beams. The traitorous humans needed to be taught a lesson by true warriors.